If you've been listening to the Fretboard Journal podcast for a while, you know we keep singing the praises of our sponsor, Dying Breed Music. Lane over at Dying Breed continues to get some of the finest golden era acoustic guitars imaginable in his inventory, including many that are so rare they seldom find themselves at any traditional dealers. He currently has a 1941 Gibson Super Jumbo 100, a 1934 Gibson L5, a 1944 Marden 00028, and much more for sale. Give Lane a call at 870-818-3434 or check out dyingbreedguitars.com if any of those sound intriguing. As always, I know Lane is looking for interesting consignment items, so give him a call if there are any great instruments in your collection that you're ready to part ways with too. He's always super responsive when it comes to questions and queries, and I know he would love to hear from you. All right, this is the Fretboard Journal podcast, and I am Jason Berlindy. I was really, really, really happy to hear from so many of you over the last week regarding our interview with Mark White book. Mark had quite the story to tell. It was an honor to hear it. It was an honor to share it with you guys. And needless to say, if you know of any builders or musicians from the past, present, or future with a great story to tell, and you think they'd be a good fit for the Fretboard Journal podcast, drop me a line at jason@fretboardjournal.com, and we will try to make it happen. Today, I am talking to one of my favorite newer singer-songwriters, Vikesh Kapoor. Vikesh is firmly rooted in the folk music tradition, I guess, of the 50s and 60s, but I just absolutely love his music. It is as simple and pure as it gets. His songs are, frankly, pretty heartbreaking, and I love him for that. We did a video with him a few years ago when he lived down in Portland, Oregon. He's since relocated to Los Angeles, and he just put out a new single called Down by the River. We talk about that. We talk about his guitar and a lot more. I hope you enjoy this. I hope you will seek out Down by the River. I don't often recommend music on this podcast because, frankly, I'm really choosy, but I do truly love this song and this artist. A couple of weeks ago, during our 150th podcast, luthier Megan Wells told us that she was going to make a trek down to Brooklyn to visit Retrofret, one of our other sponsors, and that is exactly what she did last week. I heard she had a great time. She posted a pic on her Instagram from her visit, and if you are anywhere near New York City, you really owe it to yourself to visit Retrofret's amazing Brooklyn shop at some point. I've called it a musical instrument cabinet of wonders before, and it really is. So many great and unique instruments all housed under one roof. If you remember that distinctive hand-painted 1960 D18 that Ry Cooter held on the cover of the Fretboard Journal 32, well, Ry got that guitar from Retrofret. I think a lot of other instruments that have been featured in our pages have come from there as well. They currently have a 1955 White Guard Tele that is exceptional, a 51 Gibson Southern Jumbo, a 66 Guild Starfire 3, and a 66 Fender Champ Amp. They also have hundreds of other instruments and amplifiers available. They do top-notch repairs and restoration, so look them up at retrofret.com and tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. Alrighty, our 39th issue is about to begin mailing finally. We're just a few days away from it hitting the mail stream. If you haven't subscribed yet, what's taking you so long? You really should. You can subscribe at fretboardjournal.com and we will mail you that issue. If you do that, use the coupon code podcast when you check out and I will take $5 off your order just for having to hear my voice every week. As a reader-supported magazine, obviously the subscriptions to the print edition keep the lights on for us and allow us to do all these podcast videos, all the online content, the Facebook posts, and all the other stuff you've come to love from us. So go visit us at fretboardjournal.com and check out all that we have available. All right, we're going to get to my talk with Vikesh Kapoor. Once again, the new single is called Down by the River. It's available for consumption everywhere you listen to digital music, all the usual places. And if you want to get really retro and relive the sounds of your youth and pulling records out of cereal boxes and magazines, it's also available as a flexi disc. However you listen to it, I hope you check it out, and I hope you check out Vikesh's work because it's truly remarkable. Thanks so much for listening. Vikesh, you've got this really, really beautiful song, Down by the River, coming out. First of all, is it a standalone track? Is it part of a bigger album or project or anything?
It's just a standalone track. It's one of the first songs I wrote, and I never had it recorded in a way that I liked, and so I thought this was a good opportunity to do it and just release it on its own. So
a vinyl single and then digital?
We're actually doing a flexi disc single.
Wow.
which is Are you familiar with?
Of course. I'm old enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we're just doing a small amount of flexi discs and it digitally, you know, maybe in the future it'll be released in another fashion, but for now, yeah, flexi disc.
Yeah.
Now, digital.
You said something scary, which is this was one of the first songs you wrote, and it is ridiculously good. So can you give me the backstory of where you were at in life and when you actually wrote this?
Yeah, for sure. So when I first got into folk music, I was listening to a lot of Pete Seeger, and there was a traditional song that he sang, and I guess I kind of took the route that some folk singers, you know, back in the day used to take, which was find like old melodies from traditional songs and kind of rewrite them or make them, contextualize them so that they felt more personal. And so I took a song that I heard Pete sing called Dink's Song. And it came really quickly. I mean, I wrote the song essentially in a day. I wrote it when I was right before what would have been my 23rd birthday. And so I kind of promised myself, like, I need to write this song and finish this song before I turn 23. And so, yeah, I was new to folk music and kind of, yeah, I was just mesmerized by that style of writing. And it was an inspired moment for sure. When that song came out.
So you were 23. Yeah. Was this in Pennsylvania?
This was in Pennsylvania. I was actually just visiting Pennsylvania and at the time and staying at my old childhood home with my folks. And yeah, I just wrote it in my childhood bedroom there, which is where I, you know, learned how to play guitar and first started singing many years before that. And yeah, so it was, there was something about being in Pennsylvania. It was in the wintertime, that kind of, I felt kind of sequestered in there. And, I don't know. It was a special moment. I kind of looked to that moment when I wrote that song as to recognize when those moments are coming on as a songwriter and to acknowledge them and to sit down and let yourself write. Yeah. That was the first time something like that happened to me. And it's partially why that song has stood so long and is a song that I continually like to sing, because its origin or how it was birthed was a little bit more mysterious than others. And so it's always kind of, I don't know, it's as if I'm paying respect to that by continually singing it.
Yeah. Where were you at musically before this sort of folk chapter took over?
Nowhere really. I was kind of confused. I came out of playing punk rock music when I was a teenager, and then I went off to school and kind of got distracted by that whole thing and wasn't really sure where I wanted to go musically. And then once I found folk music, I decided that I'd get a nice acoustic guitar. And I can tell you about that guitar now.
Yeah,
if you'd like.
Sure. Tell me.
So you know, I got into folk music and I thought, okay, well, I need to get an old guitar. And, not the same trip that I wrote the song, but another trip to Pennsylvania. I went into there's one small music store that's still there, on the main street in my town. And, it's where I actually took a few guitar lessons when I was about 12 years old. And it's kind of the shop that I would lurk around in. And, they were mainly a Martin guitar dealer at the time. And they had some nice guitars, and they had this little back room where they had their nicest guitars. And I went in on this trip, and it was shortly after I was, you know, found folk music, and I was certain that this was the kind of music that I wanted to write. And I went in that back room, and there was this old kind of battered Gibson dreadnought. And it was a beautiful sunburst, cherry sunburst. And I picked it up. I was with my childhood friend at the time, and I played it immediately. And I was like, yep, this is, you know, it was just another one of those moments, just kind of like, this is for me. Because this is such a small town and a small guitar shop, it's kind of weird for there to be like a, you know, a vintage Gibson dreadnought like that in there in the first place. So that was all the more reason for me to take, for it to kind of grab my attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just on, it was on consignment. Maybe it was like $700 or something like that. And I talked to the ladies that own the music store, and they hated the guitar. They were devout Martin purists, and because this guitar was like had a bunch of cracks in it, and like the binding was cracked, and it was kind of sinking in some parts, they really didn't like it. But it sounded so good to me. And so I asked them if they could talk to the consigner and see if they'd bring down the price. And I ended up getting it for $500.
Wow.
And I just saved up some money pretty quickly and bought this vintage Gibson for $500, which was kind of crazy. And so that became my main guitar for the first few years, and in which I wrote, the song for my debut album, the song, The Ballad of Willie Robbins, that was written on that guitar, and as was Down by the River. And so, and then later I found out that, you know, like Dylan, who obviously was a great influence early on, started out with his first Gibson when he wrote his first album. It was actually a J50, which is kind of weird that was the case. And it became like a magic moment, you know. It's as if that guitar were meant for me at the time. And so that song Down by the River came out quickly as a result, and I kind of, the whole thing felt holy in a sense.
Yeah. You mentioned the guitar store being fans of Martin's. How close were you to Nazareth, or where in Pennsylvania were you?
I'm right in the dead center of Pennsylvania. 9,000 people live in that town.
Okay.
It's still far from Nazareth. I actually just got to visit Nazareth a few years ago for the first time, and, you know, marvel at their museum, their collection of guitars in their museum, and play their guitars. And now I play a Martin mainly, but it's that's another thing. It's kind of interesting that I don't know many other musicians, especially folk musicians, that come from Pennsylvania, and I like being from Pennsylvania, and it's cool that, you know, Martin Guitars was born there also.
I mean, my image of Pennsylvania is, you know, aside from Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, is pretty rural, very white. What was it like growing up there? Were you found punk music, so that must have been a help.
Yeah, that was a help. I certainly felt like an outsider in some ways. My parents were immigrants from India and came there, and we were always kind of outsiders, even though I don't want to say we were we were included within the community, but in a sense I always felt like I had an outsider's perspective, despite having close friends there and despite playing in a band with some of those close friends.
How did they pick that town?
I don't know. I don't know. They were living in, they immigrated into New York City, and they're living in Manhattan and the Bronx, and then just ended up there. And that's where, you know, half of my life was. So,
yeah.
It's cool being, you know, I appreciate it as I've gotten older being from there, but at the time, you know, when I was 18 or so, I was ready to move on.
Yeah. And, What I love about your music, I mean, you mentioned Pete Seeger and Dylan, and then I sometimes hear like John Jacob Niles, and it's all this really classic, you know, early folk music from that era. Is that primarily what you listen to?
Not anymore. You know, I still listen to it. In some ways I try not to be too influenced by what's going on right now. Not so much because I'm a traditionalist, but just because I think I might be more easily influenced by what's contemporary and what's popular within, like, not in pop music so much, but within like the realms I'm working in. And you really never know how long, how sound those songs really are. And the thing about the older songs is that they've, you know, obviously stood the test of time, and that's, I want to be able to write songs that do the same. So those are my heroes, and, you know, and I want to be able to try to achieve, songs that can reach those levels or exist, you know, strike that balance of, you know, being specific enough that they can touch people and not feel dated, but also be general enough that they can move across time without also feeling dated.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think more so though, you know, what's become more important to me as a songwriter is just finding songwriters that have singular voices, people that you listen to and you recognize that it can't be anyone but that person.
Yeah.
So, you know, Nina Simone has become a huge influence spiritually and from an emotional sense, as has, you know, someone like Leonard Cohen, of course.
Sure.
And, yeah, I mean, it's just with songwriters like that, it's unending. I mean, the well is so deep, from those songwriters and what they've given. And, I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, I can be inspired by something that's happening now. Like maybe a songwriter like Angel Olsen, I feel has a very singular voice, and she's tapping into things those songwriters did, but she feels very contemporary. But I can always go back to those old songwriters, and I'm not tired of them. They don't feel dated or anything. They just feel like transcendent. So,
well, you've done an exceptional job. I mean, especially the case in point, this song, like being one of your first ones, like you definitely are unmistakable, and your songs have had a great arc to them, and you kind of came out of the gate running really, you know, well, and it's been interesting to follow you. When I last talked to you and we filmed a video with you, I think you were down in Portland. You've moved to LA, I heard.
Yeah, I moved to LA. I traded in the rain for the sun. So
what was the decision making like for that?
It was that I wanted more sunshine, and I wanted to just, I needed something new. I needed the element of surprise, and in a city as sprawling as LA, there's surprise around every corner, and that helps me with my writing. And yeah, that those are the main reasons. For me, like, in order for me to write, I'm inspired mainly by newness, and so I need things like picking up and moving to kind of get me out of a slump.
Yeah, I know a few venues down there, not many super well, but you know, what is the state of the kind of acoustic folk scene or acoustic guitar scene down there right now?
Man, I don't know. I mean, I played at McCabe's a couple years ago and I loved playing there, and that's a cool instrument shop, and many of my heroes and people I respect have played there over the last few decades, you know, and
sure.
Backstage they have photos of you know, Tom Waits on the stage and Joni Mitchell and all these people, and that's pretty incredible to see. And McCabe's was great, but you know, I like playing all kinds of places. One place I really like is Hollywood Forever Cemetery, which is, they have this Masonic lodge there, which you can play in. And I did a show there a couple years ago. And so, yeah, it's, you know, I'm fairly new to the city. And I haven't been playing that many shows, but hopefully with the song being coming out, it kind of will lead to more.
Yeah.
For me to playing live more again.
Are you working on a full length album or a special project?
I'm putting together some songs slowly for sure. And I've actually been writing a lot of them on a flamenco guitar, this Ramirez I have, which happens to be my nicest guitar. And so it's been nice to be able to write songs on that. And that was a guitar that I actually recorded down by the river on. It's on that nylon string. Yeah, putting together songs slowly, and you know, I haven't released anything in a long time, so it's kind of as if I'm starting from scratch a bit. And so we'll release this song and see where it goes from there. I did a little bit of recording in Portland and did a little bit of recording in Oklahoma. And I'm hoping that I can go back to Oklahoma later this year and finish up some stuff. With the move and everything, it's just getting adjusted to that.
That's cool. As long as you haven't like taken up surfing and forgotten about music, that's good.
Yeah.
So what's
fishing.
The fishing?
Yeah, fishing.
What's in Oklahoma? Talk to me about why you're recording there.
Oh yeah, so I did some tour dates with this garage rock band, the bassist in that band had a studio in Norman, and you know, was interested in recording with me, and so he actually worked on the majority of Sufjan Stevens' record, Carrie and Lowell.
Sure.
Sufjan went there by himself and worked with Jared Evans, who's the guy that recorded me, and another fellow there, and they helped Sufjan kind of flesh out a lot of the songs on Carrie and Lowell. And so that was pretty amazing. That record is gorgeous, and so I trusted going to Oklahoma and working with a producer for the first time and letting him kind of throw his ideas at me. So I went there for 5 days. I slept in the studio. There was a little cot, and we worked on finishing, you know, scrap ideas I had and just like trying to get them somewhere. I'm starting to sing some of those songs live now, so that's been fun. But none of those recordings are finished yet, but I think, you know, it's a really unassuming place, but really a really good feeling. Tulsa's quiet. I mean, Norman's quiet. I mean, Norman. And
yeah.
You know, I'd like to go back there once I can manage to.
Great. Well, yeah. Lukasz, thank you so much. This song. When does this song come out?
It's coming out. It's premiering on May 12th, and it's officially being released on May 19th.
Awesome. Congratulations. It's beautiful.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great talking to you.